So we've talked about the get real. You've talked about research, engaging, and asking. And what about live like or love?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay, so you've made the ask. You've done everything right. And the person says yes. Well, then live like and love is easy. You live with them, you love them, you like them. The rule of, do you know, have you heard of the rule of thumb of how many times you're supposed to say thank you between solicitations?
No, what is that?
I've heard it consistently at seven.
Seven times.
Yeah, so you ask for the money and then you say thank you, 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 and then you ask them again. So that's part of the living, liking, and loving. The real challenge to that gets in when the person, you ask for the money and the person just says outright no. Or they come in really low. You ask for $25,000, they give you $250. You just know that they didn't get it. People are more important than the gift that they could currently give.
Oh, that is awesome. Can you repeat that?
People are far more important than the gift that they can currently give. We're in a relationship business, and it's just right on a human level to just treat people well, to have the integrity to treat people more important than the money that they may or may not give. I firmly believe that, and I may sound like I'm contradicting myself with the reason that I give for firmly believing that, but we had one donor in one organization I worked at who was ticked off with a decision that was made, so he asked for his $40,000 gift back. It was an annual gift. It was about 10% of what we were raising that year, and we cut the check back to him after a lot of high-level discussions and about high-level both volume and people in the organization, but we did it. And within 2 years, because of a concerted effort and a very crafted system of touches and cultivation, he ended up making a gift of $500,000, far larger than the $40,000 that he had asked for back. But we strategized, how are we going to live with him? He's still going to be part of our universe. He's invested heavily over the years. How can we convince him that even if he doesn't like that decision, we're the kind of organization that he does like, and what he experienced is still true of this organization, even if the situation that he experienced isn't existing anymore. And part of that was just me sending emails about the opera. Found out he was on the board of the opera somewhere, and so I just sent some emails, just very much getting to know the person. So the living, liking, and loving, a reason could be that down the road, if you handle the no well, they may raise your status potentially in that person's eye. People don't do that well in our culture. They kind of, okay, see ya, move on, flush, whatever. There's all sorts of different things that we do because we don't like that sense of rejection. But if we can still look the person in the eye and respect them, that may, who knows what it will lead to later on down the road.
And that's excellent. That's an excellent point. To just be friendly with that person, keep that relationship going, even if it's maybe different, or, you know, like you said, you just send him a few emails, and it kept the positive idea in his mind of your organization.
Right, right. And it was only when I was in the area, hey, I'm going to be in the area, love to get together with you for a cup of coffee, learn more about opera, I don't know anything about it. Opera has been one of the fun ones for me, because I don't know anything about it, and it's fun to see who does. But developing some sort of hobby, it can be a really great way to just let people know that you're interested in them more than just their money.
Yes.
Not to treat them like an ATM.
That's great. I haven't found one of those human ATMs yet, personally.
I know, but it's fascinating the number of times that even those of us with the best intentions forget that. And so we feel like, oh, we're sending the letter because we sent it every year, and it's just pushing the button, bringing the money, and then when it doesn't come in, what's going on?
Yeah.
Don't they know how much we need? So
how do you turn that person who maybe gave a one-time gift into someone who gives an annual gift?
Great question. And this, again, varies. I'm finding now, being in healthcare, the way people are introduced to an organization is different in different fields. One of the major ways that I think getting someone in the habit of annual giving is, I don't know if you've had the experience, but it's fascinating to talk to someone who says, well, I give to that organization every year. If you actually do the research, you find out that it's been 3 years since their last gift. So given the fact that people don't always remember what a year is, it's a 12-month period, and given the fact that some of our fiscal years are just screwy. I mean, some of them start in October 1st, some start in June 1st, and that's confusing to a donor. I gave 2004, 2005, 2003, 2004, 2005. Well, it happened to be that the 2003 gift was given in the same fiscal year, so it didn't count for annual giving. I mean, the donors don't really need to know that. What I encourage people to consider doing is a three-year pledge. Would you consider giving? And so whatever, if you're going to ask them for $1,000, ask them for $3,000 over the next 3 years. Two things happen from that. One, you get the benefit of repeat giving, which is building in a habit. People, you know, there's been a lot of statistical research over the decades that people get in the habit of giving, they'll tend to keep on giving. The other one is you get much more time to say thank you between gifts. If you're trying to say thank you in seven different ways, newsletters, events, you know, trinkets, whatever your ways of saying thank you are, you have if you have 21, what's 3 times 12? 36 months to say thank you seven times. You have a lot more chances to do that and develop that relationship than you do if you have only 12 months to say thank you seven times. So I would, depending on the level of the ask, build that in. Another great trick I learned from the why, and it could be an apocryphal story from the why, was if you make an ask and the person says yes, and you think it thought it was a stretch gift, and they say yes like it's pocket change, you say, would you consider giving $1,000 to this campaign? And the person, whether it's an annual campaign or a capital campaign, and the person says, sure. If you can say it without tripping up, saying, each year for the next 5 years?
Just kind of flip that in there.
That way you've already made your $1,000 gift to $5,000. I did try that a couple weeks ago, and the guy just laughed at me. But it was worth a shot. We seriously underasked him, had no idea, and we're still grateful for the gift that he's making, obviously.
Would it be easier to, the next year or maybe sometime during this year, approach him again and say, you know, we've appreciated your gift. It's helped us in these ways. Would you be able to, do that as an annual plan giving or annual gift?
Yeah.
After that first gift, you kind of get them in there and they get to learn more about the organization and maybe you've had some time to help them become a donor evangelist at that point. So by the time the next year rolls around, maybe they're more open to doing an annual gift.
That's great. That's really good. One of the things I think your listeners may be saying is, well, this takes a lot of effort. I mean, I don't have time to do this. I'm trying to run my nonprofit as well, and I didn't get into it for fundraising. And it's a lot easier sometimes with letters, because we feel like we're doing something. It's very passive, but we feel like we're doing active. We create copy. We send out letters. I sat with one board that had a perfect situation to endow a scholarship forever and make it a family gift, something that would introduce the other family members to this organization. I mean, it was just, you couldn't have asked for a better situation. And to a person, they all chickened out. You could see them. I said, ask her to put this organization in her state. The worst that she could say is no. You've got all the reasons why she will want to. There was this deadly pall that hit the board meeting, and then finally somebody looked up and said, well, what if we sent a letter? And then the next person said, to everyone in our database about plan giving. And you could see this collective sigh of relief. Oh, we're off the hook. And that particular group I knew well enough to call them all chickens. Yes, they're all chickens. What is going on here? Nobody. Would you think about it? Would you give... rewrite your will because you got a letter? No. Why do you think this person will? But the reason that it is labor intensive to work with individuals. But if you look at Giving USA, every year, I think it's aacfre.com. If you just type in Google Giving USA, you'll find the report. Consistently, year after year, 84% of the money given in the United States is given by individuals. The other 16% is given by corporations and foundations. So if you have only X amount of time in your week for fundraising, which is legitimate, I mean, that's a reality. There's other things to do in life. I can't think of anything right now, but there are other things to do in life. Try to take that time and think 80% of whatever your time allotment for fundraising is going to be calling people, getting to know them, going out for lunches with them. You have to eat anyway, so never eat alone, that sort of thing. That could be a great way to prioritize your time and try to still make it work with all the other responsibilities you may have.
So you think that's more productive than doing a mail campaign or doing an event or that kind of a thing?
Well, that's where I do, but I know the other things are necessary and they're not bad. because it can be a really easy way to introduce someone to your organization if you're having a cocktail party or some sort of event. That can be a really great way for even, you know, people that are interested in your organization to come together and say, hey, why don't you come to this event with me? You know, why don't you do this bike ride? Why don't you do this walkathon? And then people have a good experience there. Just those aren't necessarily the best return on investment for time and money. If you look at, especially if you factor in staff time, those can be expensive events to do. But I know on your site there's a lot of good information for events, which is definitely not my forte. But they can be beneficial on a number of other levels than just fundraising. It can be good community PR. News organizations like to talk about events more than they do about being asked for money. So it could be a human interest story. So I would definitely, and then direct mail, one of the huge benefits of direct mail is if you send one letter every 6 months, you keep the addresses current in your database without having to buy any NCOA updates.
Oh, right, because you'll get the update back in the mail if there's a change in the address. Is
exactly,
that what you mean?
Exactly, yeah. One, if people are going to do mail, and if that's what you've done, that's good. And it's an important, I think it's still an important part in our society. And it actually, if you've looked at any of the statistics, the response rates are going up now, which is interesting for nonprofit fundraising. One other thing is don't just send an annual, the idea of an annual appeal is not necessarily well-founded. An annual appeal should be, if it's an appeal, I've seen organizations where that meant where they sent one letter a year. And you may as well just get up in an airplane and drop your shirt over a city for the same response rate. What if you do it, make sure you're going to send two or three. And it's just do the due diligence internally to figure out what's the theme and how is the succession going to be. And what is the story that you're going to be telling through them. But even if you sent one in 1 month and then 2 months later sent the same exact letter to people that didn't respond, you'll still get a much better response rate if you didn't even change anything. We've tried that as an organization. It saves time and it saves printing costs because it's just one setup fee and you're running twice as many copies.
Right. Is there a value in maybe sending a smaller list but people who are very targeted and then being able to follow up with those people by telephone?
Most definitely. That would be the combining the best of both worlds because sometimes you can't meet all, everybody in your database, but you could send a letter and then figure out the people that maybe through the prospect rating or something else that are more likely to give. Obviously, the people that gave the most recently are the ones that are warmest to give again. Creating some sort of, without overdoing it, creating some basic segments like what you just said doing a slightly different cover letter saying one of us will be following up with you in the next week or two. And make sure you do that. but then one of the things that a lot of organizations like and have been very, very beneficial is just having cocktail parties. As long as the host of the cocktail party, the non-solicitation event, host of the cocktail party, and the presenters have all made their gifts at the level that you're looking for, and they're inviting their peers, it can be a great way to introduce people to the organization.